You're listening to the Food Talk Show. Hi there, you're listening to the Food Talk Show. Yet another hour of incredibly interesting stuff about food. Not tasting any food today, which is a bit of a shame.
We have just had lunch, though.
That's fine. Not tasting any food today, but as usual, we're talking about all the new amazing things we're finding in food technology and generally food in general, I suppose. And I'm joined by Guy Routledge of Food Rush.
Hello, Sue. Nice to see you again.
And, yeah, the lovely Ollie from Great British Chefs. Hi, Ollie.
Hi, nice to be back.
And we've got a great guest here. I'm dying to talk to Ben. And this is Ben Leask of Ben's House.
Indeed. Nice to meet you all.
Nice to meet you too. So we're going to crack on chatting to Ben. And then later on, we're going to talk about the Food Awards because
There's been so many amazing entries. We've been almost inundated, is a good word.
I've been tasting my way through them steadfastly.
And you've even been to taste the meal that we're going to be having on the award night, haven't you?
I have, yes, a lovely chef.
I wasn't invited, was I, Sue?
Oh, no, I forgot to do that. Sorry about that. Yeah, no.
I haven't got an invitation.
No, you didn't. Have you not?
I don't think I have either.
Okay, all right. It's all hush hush, secret. I'll make sure you get an invitation. Yeah, it's on the 12th of June, which is a Monday.
And it's part of London Tech Week as well, isn't it?
First day of London Tech Week.
Kicking off in style.
We're at Oxo Tower, and I went to meet the lovely Paul Yeo, who's the chef at Oxo Tower.
Head chef.
And he's created this amazing meal for the awards ceremony.
Can you give us any tips? Have
you ever been to any of the awards things? And it's normally
it's all very beige.
Meat. There's this meat in gravy that doesn't move particularly. That's the gravy, not the meat. And normally sort of roast potatoes and some peas or something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty
painful. No, we weren't having any of that. So we've got he's created this incredible menu. It's got flowers in it and all sorts. And
fancy.
Yeah, yeah. Beautiful fillet of duck breast and awesome, gorgeous, gorgeous salmon. And then the pudding, it's just like about 15 things in it, which I can't even describe. But really nice, balanced, beautiful.
I'm definitely going to get an invite.
Yeah. It's not just that. It's all the lovely people who've been shortlisted are all doing a little showcase. So when you walk in at 7 o'clock, there's going to be like a marketplace where you can go and taste all these different things and these amazing people who've entered. And I think that's really important because, you know, with most of these award ceremonies, you know, somebody's up there and you don't actually know who they are or what they've done, you know, but actually you'll be able to taste and you'll be able to chat to the producers before we go in for dinner. Yeah, how good is that? We've also got a People's Award. So if you go on to foodtalkawards.com and get yourself a ticket, although I don't think there's many left, then you can vote for some of the winners while you're there that night, which again makes people really involved as opposed to standing up and, you know, being removed.
And we'll talk a bit more about that in the second half of the show today.
Yes, and it was great meeting Paul and the team, but I made a bit of a mistake because afterwards we went up to the proper restaurant right at the top and started having cocktails.
That doesn't sound like you at all, Sue.
No, not one of my wisest decisions. Anyway, let's have a chat with Ben. So Ben, you've got this. Well, you haven't anymore. Actually, you're about to move because you've
transition.
So popular. So Ben's house is was located in Fitzrovia, which isn't a foreign country. It's sort of along. It's just off the. It sounds like it is, isn't it, Fitzrovia? It's sort of off the Euston Road, between sort of Euston Road and Charlotte Street, round the back of Goode Street and Warren Street, isn't it? Sort of that area,
north of Oxford Street, in the middle of London.
Yeah, sort of there. Somewhere.
Yeah, I think it's a really historic place, but everyone's forgotten about it. It's sort of between Bloomsbury, Camden, Soho,
it's in a great
Marylebone,
place,
but hidden.
It's not invented by Foxtons then?
No, it's not.
No, it might have been revived by then.
And there's a lovely square, Fitzrovia, in the
middle. Oh, it's gorgeous. That's where my celebrity customers live.
Of course they do.
It's just round the corner from where we are today.
It is just round the corner from where we are. Anyway, you set up this store and it was a celebration of everything to do with amazing London food and drink. And you actually go and scour the city for the newest and most quirky products. It sounds like what we do on this show, actually.
Yeah.
And you'll find bottles of wine and fine beers and groceries and stuff to put in your larder and breads and cheese and all sorts of things. And I guess what you could say is you're a food curator. really.
Yeah, I think so. But I think the job of a shopkeeper nowadays is to find the things before Selfridges does, before Fortnum's, before Tesco's. So I'll have things on my shelf for 6 months and then they'll get swept up and become national,
mainstream.
But we're the stepping stone, aren't we?
So why did you set it up? Are you just, you've always been interested in food?
Everyone. I've always worked for food. I've worked at La Fromagerie, Ginger Pig, Comptoir and Cook.
La Fromagerie, just off Marylebone.
Yeah, oh, all the big guys in London food, you know?
Yeah.
I think the irony is with those is they're so special to work for, but they're all so owner-centric. So the only way you could become the boss is if they, well, they're not going anywhere, are they?
You've got to be rich for a start.
Yeah, you can't be promoted in those businesses. The owner's there every day. Now I'm doing the same thing. My staff can't become the boss either. But I think that's the inherent brilliance.
You named it after yourself.
Yeah, you've got to put your name on the door, haven't you?
No one else with a different name can come along and take it away from you.
No, but also I hate shops where you don't know who's in charge.
Yeah.
I'd want to walk into somewhere and know whose place it is and know who's choosing the stock and know who's...
So Ben's house is fairly obvious that it's Ben, isn't it?
Yeah.
I met this guy who's... I think he did some television stuff a long time ago. He's a cheese detective. And I've forgotten the number that he had on his shop. And I used to say, oh, that's amazing, that. It's whatever his shop was, 1754. I said, God, have you, you know, is this something you've been taking over, family things since 1754? He said, no, that's the alarm code. He says, I keep forgetting it. He said, but because I've got it on my shop, I never forget it. Like, interesting way of naming your shop, really.
Yeah, and now everyone can break in. Thank you.
Well, now they can, yeah. Always been interested in food and drink. Is there any particular... How do you source these things? Do you just look at gaps in the marketing or do you just taste stuff and go, that's amazing, other people must have it?
I think at the beginning, I mean, everything on my shelf, I knew everyone personally. So it was all people I'd met. And to be honest, the part of the reason I started was a lot of products that I'd found, gins and wines and things that I really struck. I worked at Hotel Chocolat for a while in between and was setting up restaurants for them. And cafes.
Mm. You really have been in the food business, haven't you?
All courses.
Yeah.
But we struggled to get some of the more esoteric products onto the menu in the restaurants because of purchasing and because of various systems that these big companies have in place. Medium-sized businesses, really. So they didn't really like the idea of Ross Butler from Butler's Gin turning up with a case of gin and me giving him cash.
When you have these slots in supermarkets where, you know, they say, well, that's great, but you have to deliver yours at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday, every Tuesday without fail, you know, da-da-da, and you've only got a 10-minute slot and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
These are guys who are not at that level, aren't they? And they might have a really good, you know, they might be flush with stock and then they might not have stock 6 weeks later, but that doesn't matter to you, does
No,
it?
Not at all. If something runs out, that's quite exciting, isn't it?
I don't know. I'm not a shopkeeper.
Yeah, not if you're Tesco's.
No, it just means there's more coming or there'll be something new to replace it. Or there's like Melanie that owns Brahms and Liszt, which is you should all go actually, amazing off-licence in Clapton. But she also makes mezcal when she's in Mexico and she only has Mondays off. So if it sells out on a Wednesday, I have to wait till the next Monday. But that's perfect, isn't it?
God, this is so
refreshing. I think that's so...
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
I also remember I lived in India at one point. And I remember going to this fruit market stall I always used to go to get my morning juice. And I said, you know, can I have my mango cream? And they said, well, mango's not in season now.
Yeah.
And I'm like...
You stupid man.
Exactly. But it was a great moment. It was like, you know, I had it on Friday and then on Monday it was no longer there. And I don't feel at times we live enough in that world where things... Everything's available. Everything's always, you know, it's very refreshing.
Yeah. And unlike Tesco's, I don't think having something missing from your shelf is a problem if you know why it's missing. If you can tell that story.
So you've got an amazing range of stuff. I'm guessing that your customers will come in and not say, right, I'm coming in because I want to buy this, I want to buy that. They might have been a little bit of that, but they might come in and go, Ben, what have you got that's different that I need to taste?
Yeah, completely. But also I think food very much now is about gifting, isn't it? So people are coming in for something new for their... boyfriend, wife, esoteric uncle that they can't think of anything for. You know, it's all about...
Well, it's tough. What do you give people who have got everything? Because we all, you know, most of us have in this day and age. You need that discovery element and being able to go to a place where it's all about discovery and it's all about the things on the shelf. It's fantastic.
Well, I think the customers come to me and they buy something and then they relay the story to their...
So this very, very much is about stories, isn't it? All these
completely. That's the only way you can sell it, I think.
Right.
So how many products do you have in your shop?
A couple of hundred, probably.
Okay.
And it's getting more and more booze orientated as we go on.
Is that a personal preference?
I think that's where the innovation's happening. A lot of innovation's happening in that sector at the moment.
Yeah.
But then again, definitely. You say that, oh, there's so many gins, we don't need another gin. I quite like gin, but
do
we don't need so many
bit.
Different brands.
Well, we do if they're different, but I think a lot aren't. That's the thing. I mean, last week we had Hiver Beer on, and I do think she's trying to do something different.
Yeah, it's
and
a really, really fantastic
therefore,
product.
She's got a space for it. Mm, I think if she was just copying, the leading brand, then you're going to really struggle, aren't
you? It's got to be something new and interesting and innovative. Otherwise, the story gets old and you don't want to hear it over and over again.
But you're differentiating there between brand, something that's manufactured and a story that's weaved, and actual innovation in product. And I think that's a really important difference because there are products that are adopting really interesting processes and using different ingredients, and that's interesting. Mm. If it's just, it's the same as the other one, but it's just got a different name on it.
And probably more expensive.
And definitely more expensive.
Model.
Then you're going to struggle. Interesting.
Yeah. So what's your profile of your typical client that wanders into your shop, either accidentally or on purpose?
I don't think there is one, actually. Honestly, it's everybody, isn't it? I think we get
working
class grandmas who haven't got a lot of money that come in once a month just to buy a really fancy loaf of bread.
Wow.
And that's their little treat that month. And then we get people coming in buying cases of wine.
Yeah.
But I think everyone needs luxury in their lives, don't they? Whether it's a £5 loaf of bread or a £100 case of wine.
And I
everyone
think the
wants
thing,
something
I think the
special.
Thing, I think the thing with luxury in food is that you can, if you can hear that tapping in the background, it's
sorry.
Ollie typing. What are you doing, Ollie?
I'm bringing up a data point.
He
does love his data, he's a bit of a statistician. I think the great thing about luxury in food is that you can treat yourself for £3 or £4 or £5 by having the most amazing bread or jam or whatever. Can be a treat.
Yeah, I used to work in chocolate and we used to talk about it a lot, but you can have the best chocolate bar on earth for £7.
Which,
that's
in my
remarkable.
Personal opinion, is Duffy's, who are an English chocolate maker up north, got an hour now.
Yeah,
they have
you
the
might
most
be right, actually.
Single origin chocolate that naturally tastes like raisins. It's incredible.
Amazing.
And it's £7, and you feel like you've just treated yourself to the most luxurious thing in the world.
My Beautiful. Tapping has finished. Here's the stat.
Okay, which, and the stat is.
So interesting. So the question that we asked on a survey was, do you know how much do you agree with the following statement? I like discovering new artisanal brands. There's a national survey of 2,000 people. So if you look at it nationally, 37% of the UK agree with that statement, which is a lot. Wow. I mean, that's a lot of people. When you move to London, it moves to 52.
Wow.
So half of Londoners enjoy discovering a new artisanal food brand.
They need to go to Ben's shop, don't
we
they?
Can. which does play to your point, which is, I think it is a broad church that comes and likes discovering it. I mean, there is an income game here, which, when you go into the higher income groups and we look at it from a £50,000 plus household income group, the numbers are up in the sort of 52s, 53s. Mm. When you go into the lower income groups, the numbers do drop. I mean, that's natural, because there are certain price barriers on these products. Mm. But it's higher than, that 52% number for me was surprising. I mean, that's a big number.
Yeah, it's very high.
Mm. It just shows how much interest there is. You've rather outgrown your premises and you're going to have to go somewhere new because it's catching, what you're doing is catching on. Have I got that right?
Yeah, we are. We're moving down to King's Cross. What day is it today? In 3 weeks' time.
3 weeks' time.
Which would be amazing.
So we're talking about sort of beginning of May. We're hoping that you'll be up and running.
No,
June, actually.
1st of June.
June, where you're going to be up and running. That'll be incredible.
So come see us. It'll be amazing.
Yeah. So you can't give me a typical client profile, but can you tell me any of the trends that you're seeing right at this moment in time that you're quite excited by?
Older person...
You're not older. Well, you're older than me. So
yeah. We're all the same age.
Yeah.
Late 30s.
I think, yes. Yes.
Well, I wish.
I love radio.
Yeah.
I think the health thing is sticking around, actually. I think at the beginning I thought it was a fad and a lot of people coming to see me with healthy products and you stick them on the shelf for 2 weeks and no one buys them. But now...
What do you mean by healthy products? Do you mean products that are free from or all
no,
rubbish
more
taken
like
out?
Sort of turmeric or
natural.
Natural or life affirming. for all the people that do the yoga. And to be honest, so my staff are all in their mid-20s.
Yeah.
All of them love going out drinking the weekends and partying. But during the week, they all do yoga and they're super healthy and they treat their bodies like a temple. And I think that is a movement for people under 40.
Yeah, and I think a lot of them are saying, I'm not actually a vegan, but I am a vegan Monday to Thursday because that's how I, you know, that's how I want to treat my body.
Yeah.
I went to stay with my daughter who lives in Camden this week, and her cupboard is completely different from mine.
Yeah.
She loves food, she cooks food from scratch and all that sort of stuff. But they've got all these sort of health, what I would call health products, which you've just described. Which are all these basic natural things. I mean, Ollie's saying he used to live in India and stuff like that. There's a lot of coming through from these sort of ancient cultures, really, you know, that are sort of, as you say, life-affirming. And those things are really important to her in her cupboard and her, you know, her husband-to-be. And their sort of profile of what they eat during the week is quite different from me, whereas I'll have fish and vegetables and all that, but they've got all these, I won't call them supplements exactly.
They are twice as likely. So that younger age, the 18 to 34, so slightly younger than us, are twice as likely to be vegans, vegetarians, not eat fish, not eat meat, than the national average.
And permanently or just intermittently?
That I don't know. I mean, what we've got to read on is on, you know, the sort of scale of people who are not eating, you know, who are vegans, who are vegetarians, who don't eat dairy, don't do wheat, et cetera, et cetera. So, and that group is double as likely.
Mm. And they're a big group as well.
They are a big group. They are a big group.
We've been talking to a few of them recently with a new project that we're looking to do, and health certainly was like ranked as the number one thing on top of price, you know. So people, they're looking for healthy first. They're also looking for things like ethical and sustainable. They're looking for the certifications, things like, even though, you know, there's been some, you know, questions about it recently, things like fair trade and stuff like that. But people look for those things as a mark of, you know, I will make my decisions based on these things. And funnily enough, price is the one that comes furthest down the list of the kind of four or five that we were looking at.
But I think it's what Ben comes down to, that whole point about story, which is, you know, what I could consider, it's like I'm interested in where the product comes from, which isn't necessarily that it's organic, it isn't necessarily that it's free from, but like, how has it been made? What's behind it?
Yeah.
And I think amongst, you know, certainly a more affluent and food connected audience, that's really important.
Yeah, I think I used to work in, I sort of started my career at Sainsbury's, and you realise quite quickly in supermarkets that they need to have organic on a label and they need to have fair trade because they need a signifier that groups all these things together. And as soon as you start working in independent food, no one asks anymore. Mm. I haven't had anyone ask me if it was fair trade.
Is that because it's seen as a given?
They presume that I know my producers, and I do. I know every single one of them and I text them every day. But there's a connect, there's a direct connection between me and I'm selling my ethics to them.
Mm.
I'm selling my... credibility, really.
You're seeing this trend of sort of health. It's probably not the right word to use, but I think we all understand what we mean by that. Any products that you're very excited by at the moment? I mean, we're lucky enough to see all sorts of bonkers and wild and wonderful things here and some great innovations. Anything you'd recommend at the moment if I was to trot along to your shop?
We do. I've got another business that does craft service on film sets called Another House. This is where we put up a little, we have a little truck and we park it next to the Winnebago's and we just hand carve charcuterie for film stars and, you know. But the questions we get there are...
What? You're mad, aren't
you,
Ben?
A real signifier.
How did you get into...
I don't know, really.
That was
really
awesome.
We gave it a go. It seems to work.
Yeah.
I love it. My handcraft charcuterie for film stars.
Yeah.
It's kind of a conversation.
Can you imagine going to...
Whatever anyone else does,
can you imagine going to a party?
Interest.
Yeah.
My main
business, I do tax. And people go, what do? You do tax. I never get invited anywhere. You can imagine, Ben, you know, what do? I sell handcrafted charcuterie to film stars. Come round my house. I want to know all about it.
I was talking to someone the other day who said that even though this guy is a theatre producer, he said that his great chat-up line from a job career perspective was he said he designed water parks. He said apparently it was a killer line.
That's amazing.
Really? I share that with you.
Really. Anyway, do carry on about your story with the hand carved charcuterie.
The point is, most of these people, sort of LA media, whatever
types.
You want to call them, types, and the things they've started asking for, you know, they were asking for turmeric 2 years ago. They were asking for, you know, and now everyone's asking for moon dusts and supplements.
Moon dust.
Moon dust is an LA brand, but you can get it in London from Equi. basically, the idea being that, you know, your supplements come in little tablets.
Yeah.
Tablets are made of chalk and sugar, not really something you should be putting into your body. Mm. So you get your supplements in a bag with a spoon and you just put it into a milk, froth it up, make it into a tasty little drink.
Right.
Which isn't...
So you're getting shots of...
You get a little shot of healthiness, yeah.
Healthiness, yeah.
It's probably not that much different from the things the weightlifters have.
Mm. Well, I've seen these
in
things like
form, yeah, but not in concept.
Like what's spirulina wrong? Powder and stuff. You put in a smoothie and
Ollie's
things like that.
Ollie's shaking his head here.
I suppose I have a real problem with the sort of the growth of, you know, like, if you eat well, if you cook ingredients from scratch, if you cook nice vegetables, you do not need this stuff. Now, look, okay, there are certain... illnesses that you need to supplement certain things, and certain people have certain areas of their body that are deficient. But that's medical,
a minority.
Right? That's a minority. Yeah. I just think that for me, it's about it's about well-produced products and then cooking them well and eating them well and eating the right amount of them.
Mm. I think you might be right, but I'm a shopkeeper.
I know.
If they ask for it,
I'll sell it to them.
Well, as long as it's clean and it's ethical and it's well-produced, and it's basically just a vitamin shot.
Mm. Moon dust.
I mean, oh yeah, that's
you heard it here first.
Well, there we go.
Or not, maybe.
Definitely not for me. Talk to us about the drinks that you're seeing. Obviously, we're all saying that gin's quite big in London at the moment. Last week, we were talking about craft beer. Is there anything you're seeing? You think gin's over, seriously?
Well, I think it has to end, doesn't it?
I don't think it'll end.
And the question
I think it's got
is,
to cool
what comes
down
next?
A bit.
That's
yeah,
what
it's got to cool
talking
down
about.
A bit.
I'm hearing mezcal a lot at the moment.
And mezcal's huge.
Yeah.
But I think the return to vodka... Well, basically, the idea being that every barman in the world has to have a white spirit on his spirit rail, and it probably isn't going to be mezcal or tequila. Mm. Could be white rum, but why?
Or why not?
So it's going to be sort of heritage vodkas or single origin, single vintage vodkas, that sort of thing. Pushing up.
I'll make a push for Sri Lankan arak being one of the most definitive.
Explain what that is.
Sri Lankan arak, so it's made from coconuts, and you drink it basically like a dark and stormy with spicy ginger beer and a bit of lime. And the problem is you just can drink too many of them.
It doesn't taste alcoholic.
And it also carries you back to that sort of beach moment of Sri Lanka. Which
look at him smiling all over his face.
So is it low?
That's just a really good drink.
Oh.
It's got no moon dust benefits.
No, absolutely not.
I think there's also a lot of move towards sort of 20% drinks, so sochus, sojus, vermouths, where you can have a whole bottle with friends and not be hammered.
Now, do you know, vermouth for me is one of the most underrated things. There's so many bad, well, Cinzano and all martini, horrible. Whereas vermouth, I think it's quite a traditional British drink, actually. I know it's a French name. The botanicals in that are just as complex as they are in wine, in gin, and it's half the proof.
And how do you drink it?
You can drink it with soda or tonic, or just like you would a gin, actually, or on its own, because it's only 20% or 18%.
I think we do cocktails in evenings quite a lot for private parties, and we do a lot of reverse martinis now, which is double vermouth, single gin. So it's flavour heavy rather than slap you around the face martini. Yeah. I mean, martini is a ridiculous drink. You'd have two and you're under the table.
I love martinis.
I find them just too strong.
I once had a New Year's Eve party where nobody knew each other. We served, and they're all very coy.
How many of them are married now?
And we said, you know, it's black tie because we thought it'd be great fun to dress up. And people were very coy when they first came in. 10 minutes in, they were all best friends. It was brilliant. It was the best drink I've ever served. And everybody was like, after that, it went swimmingly. So my advice is do that, really.
So to pick up, because I think the alcohol-free thing is a really interesting trend. And actually, someone gave me a weird bottle the other day of something that's like a... It's a botanical alcohol free lip.
I think seed lip.
Yeah, yeah, seed lip.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, not for me. But anyway,
it's more expensive than the gin.
But I think there's going to be more and more stuff going into that space.
I've started drinking the odd gin and tonic, which I don't do much, instead of wine, because actually I'm finding wine is too strong. I'm finding wine is really strong, and you can't go out all evening now and drink wine. It's just some of it's 14.5%. Whereas, you know, very weak gin and tonic or something like that is actually...
Depends how much you drink, too.
Yeah, but you've only a couple of glasses and it's really heavy stuff at the moment. And I think that the wine, particularly the New World wines, have got to concentrate on bringing that strength down. It's just too much. And it's incredibly dehydrating as well.
But I think all of us don't drink sometimes, which is where Ben Seedlip's come in. He's a genius. The whole spirits industry is so angry with him.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He's invented something they didn't know they needed.
I need to try that, because I have yet to find a non-alcoholic drink that I could drink all evening and feel quite happy about it.
Yeah. Well, you normally just get offered Diet Coke, don't you, if you're not drinking?
Or some of those horrible, those J2O things.
J2O.
Oh, dear.
I think pubs are doing an appalling job on catering to the non-drinking moment. And if you think about it from a margin perspective, actually, you've got huge opportunity to put really interesting things on the table. Even, you know, mocktails, I mean, are diabolical and normally too sweet. I mean, I think it's like one massive, massive industry that's not yet been tapped up.
Mm. I guess every group of people has got one driver in.
They have to, don't they?
Well, they walk.
But also, I think the number of people who are actually teetotaler has increased massively in the last few years. And I think, you know, you do, in the, according to the national data, it's like, I think it's like 10% of adults now.
Really?
Wow. Nobody I know, obviously.
you're a bad influence.
It's like saying no one knows anyone who voted for Trump.
Exactly. So, Ben, just coming into your new venture, same. I presume it's the same formula, but sort of in a different premises.
Well, sort of. We're doing the food and drink and groceries during the day, and then from 6 o'clock every night, ladies and gents take over, who are an amazing bar. Have you ever been?
No.
They're in a Victorian toilet in Kentish Town.
I've heard of this, but I've not been.
Absolutely brilliant. It's somehow, they do incredible cocktails, but it feels like a little local bar. Everyone seems to sort of vaguely know each other, and it's really friendly.
That's
good. So they're going to do drinks from 6 till midnight, so it'll be food and drink and cocktails.
So making really good use of the space.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I think that's the modern way, isn't it? If you're paying rent, you have to get it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's got to stay open.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah. And it's still going to be called Ben's House. And benshouse.london, can people go onto the website and find out more?
Yeah,
it's still
all there.
Great.
Or Instagram or Twitter.
Or Instagram.
But you can't buy the products online, can you? It's only in store,
no,
I guess, because of that storytelling aspect.
Yeah. Oh,
Do you think you should?
A lot of people ask.
Do they?
But it's more my sort of northern or European, or somehow I'm quite big in Japan. I've got loads of articles in Japan.
Oh, have
but
you?
They love the same storytelling.
Yes.
So I get a lot of emails from Japan asking me, can you send me this? So I think to facilitate that would be fun.
Yeah. It's a whole different business model, though, isn't it? It's quite difficult.
Well, it opens up a new channel. But I guess then you do lose some of that kind of local community storytelling, interactive kind of thing, which is, you know, something that is hugely popular at the moment. And some people will make a special trip to come to see somebody that they trust and know and like and all that kind of stuff. So online can be a little bit different, but, you know, it certainly widens the pool for sure.
Yeah.
And, Ollie, just the things that you're seeing... any particular trends that you think that sort of Ben should be aware of? I mean, your research is particularly among foodies, people who classify themselves almost as foodies, have got great interest in food. Are they wanting to go somewhere and get recommendations, or is it an online group of people? Or a mixture of two, maybe?
I mean, I certainly think that we are seeing more and more interest in, as we said earlier, with brands with stories. And I think that what's interesting is that's going across categories now. And it sits at the very basic level, which is, you know, post things like Horsegate. People want to go to their butchers and want to go to their fishmongers and say, well, what is that? Where's its source? So at a broad base protein level, and you get that in the farmers markets. But I think there is this really interesting growth in lots of different artisanal producers, which could be in the chili world, it could be the sauces world, it could be the gin world, it could be the cheese world. I think we're seeing it across the board. And I think what's so exciting is it's not just ghettoized in one category. Mm. It is broad. Yes. But I think the one thing that we all need to remember is there is only one wallet. And as you make, you know, people are making trades because not everyone can afford, you know, organic chicken, organic this, you know, best in class this, best in class that. And therefore, people are making trades. I think what's interesting is that, to take as an example what Ben's doing, people might decide not to buy a bottle of wine for a dinner party and instead pick up an amazing ingredient or something else. So you're going to see category shifting from places that you're not actually normally competing with. That lovely pastel lady we met a few weeks ago, his name is
Smith and Sinclair, Melanie.
Exactly. I mean, Melanie, I think, is a really good example there, where, you know, she's actually competing with wine, you know, actually as a dinner party gift. And I think that's interesting. So the barriers are changing.
Mm. Well, we're going to have a little break in a minute, and then we'll come back to Ben, and you can join in about all these amazing things we've chosen as finalists for the Food Talk Awards. I'd be interesting to see how many of them you know. That would be very good.
It's like a quiz.
Yeah, almost like a quiz. Now though, we're going to go. I did a pre-record at Fudge Kitchen.
Sounds
now
delicious.
This, yeah, I'm not a great fan of chocolatey, sweetie things, as you know.
Yeah, that's true.
But this
particularly
this,
fudge you don't like.
I'm not keen on fudge. Okay. But Sian Holt, who's an amazing lady, set this company up quite a while ago now, and she's got dozens and dozens and dozens of employees, and she's got her own shops. She supplies to Harrods. She supplies all sorts of stuff, and the fudge they make, I have to say, is very buttery. It's absolutely gorgeous. All the women in the factory when I went round were so, this is my favourite. And it's so all still made by hand. And they're doing some really innovative stuff. They're really looking at different ingredients and how they produce fudge that's dairy-free. Not easy. Fudge that's sugar-free. Really, really difficult to make it taste the same. So let's listen to Sian and all her lovely colleagues at Fudge Kitchen. Hi, so I'm Sue Nelson, and I'm at the Fudge Kitchen, which is owned by Sian Holt. And I'm standing here. I've got this amazing smell that's in the air. Smells fantastic. I also look really awful, so I'm so glad it's radio, because I've got one of those blue hat things on, and I've got my lovely black coat that Sian supplied me with. Sian, how long have you been doing this? How long has Fudge Kitchen been around?
Well, Fudge Kitchen's been around for about 30 years, in fact, 30 plus years. But we've only been here in Aylsham making fudge in the way that we're doing now, that you can see, for about four
years. So if I describe this, it's about the size of what would you say is this room here?
I'm spatially inept.
You're spatially inept. It's a really, really big room. We've got loads and loads of stainless steel work surfaces here. I've got a lovely lady over there what's she doing, Sian, over there?
They are just laying out the fudge, and they're going to score it now in order to cut it. So we are currently in the process of doing several jobs here. So we've got three lines, and the first line has been cutting up cherry bakewell fudge for carriages.
And that looks, it's a lovely sort of beige, butterscotchy sort of colour. And those little flecks in it.
Yep,
those
cherry. Cherry, yep. Mm. So it's an almond fudge with cherry in it. And then over there we've got Alice, who is in the middle of NPD. So she is making a sugar-free almond bark.
Almond, we're going to go and have a look at that in a minute. Who is this lovely lady here with doing all the cherry
this
stuff?
Is Wendy.
This is Wendy.
Hello, Wendy. So I'm just looking at all this stuff here. Which one out of all the things you can see here is your favourite that you work on? That you must taste them all.
Chili chocolate.
Chili chocolate fudge.
Chili chocolate fudge. You have to try it. It's lovely.
Okay. And that you like a little bit of that sort of spiciness in there.
Mm-hmm. Very much so, yeah.
And how long have you been here sort of making all this stuff?
I've been here nearly 4 years now.
4 years. Mm. And has it put you off fudge, or do you take it home? Does everybody go, oh great, Wendy's coming home, she'll have bags full of, her pockets are full of fudge? Or
sometimes we take some home, but you're right, you do get fed up with it. You don't want to eat it. Yeah. The first month you eat a lot, and then after that you don't bother. No.
Well, that looks great. That's great. Now over here we've got these the beautiful sort of shape. I mean, how do you get them all exactly the right size? Is it part of the machine stuff? And your name is?
My name's Ariane.
And you're in charge of? You're in charge of everything, aren't you?
Yes.
She's God here, yes. So how do you get that all the sort of same size?
So for the smaller pieces, which we call our miniatures, we put them through the cutting machine, which is just here. So it's kind of like cheese wires. It's just a backwards and forwards button, and the fudge goes through the wires and cuts one way, and then we put it in the other way, put it back through, and there's a perfect square.
A perfect square. So I've got something in front of me, so I guess there's 100 pieces of fudge there?
From a batch we get 345 pieces, so.
So I'm looking now at 345 pieces of fudge.
You are indeed.
Well, I am, okay. And we've just been watching a lovely lady here her name is
Natalie.
And Natalie's doing stuff by hand, so she's got, Natalie, can you just tell me what this is? Is it chocolate? No, what is this?
Caramel fudge and caramel chocolate.
And what are these little dots on top? Are they little dots of chocolate?
Yeah, just little dots of caramel chocolate.
And we've just been watching you, and you are so dexterous. You're like the fastest person on the planet of making these look lovely. So you've got three little spots of chocolate on. which makes them look amazing. And how did you get to work at Fudge Kitchen? I mean, what, did you just leave school and go, do you know what, I must be in Fudge?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's quite a cool little job. I thought it might be really interesting to do something different.
It's good. And you do like fudge yourself?
Yeah, I do.
Thank goodness for that. Thank goodness for that. And so can you just tell me the actual process about how you make fudge? Because it's not that simple. And you've got to get the temperature right, haven't you? And obviously this is on a large scale. So can you explain from start to finish how we sort of make our way through the factory?
Yeah, of course. So on day one, we would make the fudge. So it's whipping cream, butter, sugar, lots of natural and high-quality ingredients boiled up in the kettle.
Not if you're on a diet, though, obviously.
No, obviously not. Boiled up to the correct temperature, poured out, and then there's an overnight setting period. So on day two, we would come in, we cut the fudge, and we decorate the fudge. And then again, another overnight setting period. Day three, we can come in and we can pack the fudge. And then it goes off to all of our lovely customers.
And you've got an amazing range of customers, haven't you? From Harrods to all sorts. Yeah. So
the fudge that the girls are working on at the moment is off to Claridge's. It's their Cherry Bakewell Fudge Bites, and it's a gift for the customer at the end of their afternoon tea, which is lovely.
It looks lovely. Can I have a little taste of that one? Is this one that Wendy's been working on? Yes, it is. I'll have a tiny, tiny piece. You need to talk while I'm doing this because I can't talk and eat at the same time. Tell me what that is over there that I'm looking at. It's very, very. Is that just chocolate?
That is chocolate. That's a sugar-free chocolate. And Alice is just about to coat her sugar-free almond bark. So that's a brand new product coming into the range very soon. Our first sugar-free range.
Wow, I've just tasted that. I'm not great at having something very sweet and sugary, but it isn't sweet and sugary. It's got a really... It's very buttery, actually. It's got a really nice buttery... Yeah, and the sour cherry is good because it brings that level of sweetness down, doesn't it? Excellent. Yeah, really, really good.
One of my favourites.
One of your favourites. Right, Sian has just bought me over something. Is this the sugar-free?
No, this is actually our new recipe for butterscotch.
Can you just explain to me how you make butterscotch? Because actually, butterscotch is quite difficult, and loads of people don't make butterscotch anymore. Whereas it used to be quite a traditional
thing,
didn't it?
Yes. So I think all of those old confections are having a bit of a comeback, to be honest.
Still warm. Mm.
So, straight out the pot. So it sets quick, as you can see. So we've been filling about with different types of sugar. So this one is made with entirely brown sugar, no white sugar in it at all. And whipping cream, obviously, and lots of butter, which is why it's called butterscotch. But really, butterscotch mostly means deep caramel with butter.
Lovely, deep, caramelly sort of taste. So you must get shed loads of cream delivered and shed loads of butter. I mean, how much butter do you get through in a month, I don't know, or a week or something?
Good grief. Well, I have absolutely no idea off the top of my head. It's quite seasonal, obviously.
Yeah.
So we would probably get through, tons and tons in a year, obviously, of which probably three quarters of it we would use between June and December.
Quite seasonal.
Build up towards Christmas. I mean, we start making fudge for Christmas in July.
It's a good job it's got a really good shelf life, isn't it, really? It Otherwise, is. You'd be yes. really stuck.
We would, indeed. Yeah, and some things have longer shelf life than others. Obviously, brittles and caramels will last sort of 9-12 months against about 6 months for fudge.
And new product development's really, really important to you because I know Fudge Kitchen is renowned for its innovation. But actually, you have to be, don't you? Because that's the way you stay ahead of the competition.
It is. And that's why we have chosen, as we've grown, to keep our batch production small. So we still make in 10-kilo batches. We just make a lot more 10-kilo batches than we used to. But that gives us flexibility. And
quality control.
Yeah, quality control and flexibility. So... today, we've been making, just today, lots of different new flavours, both for ourselves, for our own range, but also bespoke flavours for other customers. We've been making lavender fudge. We've been making unicorn tears gin fudge.
Oh, I've got to taste some of that. Definitely want to taste some of that.
And we've been doing a lot of work with the sugar-free, which is something very new for us for this year as we're developing our free-from range in both fudges and brittles and caramels.
The free-from movement's quite important, though, isn't it? And although you're making fudge, which has been incredibly difficult to do sugar-free and butter-free, dairy-free. You've got to be in that market, haven't you?
I think you have, but from our point of view, we are not in that market so much because we think there's anything wrong with sugar, because, you know, we are sugar in your face. But what we would like to be able to do is to have in, products in our range that mean that we're inclusive to those people who can't eat sugar or can't eat dairy, so that we can find a way of having a product that they too
can join in. Yeah, can join in with everybody else, really.
But you know, and in itself, dairy-free fudge and things like that has been done before, but it doesn't taste nice. And to my mind, there's absolutely no point in doing something if at the end of the day it doesn't taste good. It's got to taste good.
And I think what's really interesting with the free from movement now is if you were gluten free or whatever, you sort of knew you had to put up with really rubbish bread. Whereas now people are actually choosing that sometimes for all sorts of reasons, not necessarily their health. And they are expecting it to be as good as the, in inverted commas, real thing, aren't they?
Exactly. And that's the point at which we start. So with our dairy free fudge, for example, that's taken us a long time, probably in total 18 to 24 months to actually get right. Sugar-free fudge itself is almost impossible at this point, because of course you need a fudgy grain.
It's a granular texture, isn't
it? Yeah, you need the sugar crystal as it crystallizes creates that texture. And the sugar-free alternatives at the moment, we're having trouble getting them to perform in the same way. But we can do caramel sauces, we can do brittles and things like that sugar-free. So come and try some if you'd like.
I'm going to in a minute. I'm just going to end, though, before I do that and stuff my face, because I can't actually talk on the radio and eat at the same time, unfortunately. I know product development's really important. And sorry, the name of your lady doing product
Alice.
Alice. So yeah. We know Alice is really working hard on that. The last couple of things that you're really proud of as new products that you've launched recently?
Well, I think perhaps what set us off on the whole cause of new product development and gave us confidence that actually it was something that we could be quite good at was when we invented drinking fudge. When everybody would say, drinking fudge, what on earth is that? From there, really, we've gone from strength to strength to just have the confidence of giving things a go. I think that's what it comes down to.
And people like a bit of novelty. They do like to try different things. I mean, lavender fudge is an example, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, a lot of these things don't even sound like they would go with fudge necessarily.
But hey, give it a go.
Yeah, always give it a go. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, I'd just like to say thank you to Sian Holt and all the lovely ladies. You don't have any men here. Do you have any men here?
We do. We have men outside of the production bit who are stock control.
But we have loads of lovely ladies here.
Archetypal like that, actually.
Yeah, you are, aren't you? But yes, I'd like to say thank you to all the girls here. And I'm just going about to tuck in some fudge. So Sian Holt and Fudge Kitchen. And you really should Google Fudge Kitchen and try some because it is the best. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Sue.
Well, that was the lovely Sian Holt and her... Well, her staff are so fantastic and they're so, I don't know, they're just so dedicated and passionate. I like people who are passionate about food.
Absolutely.
Passionate about food.
Good people, good food.
Talking about being passionate about food, we've obviously got the Food Talk Awards, which we're hugely excited and we've had some great, great entries. So what I was going to do, Guy, I didn't, well, you didn't actually turn up for the judging. That's probably because I forgot to invite you. Sorry about that.
I just looked at the list of judges on the website, which you can get at foodtalkawards.com, and I'm not even on the list.
No. So I'll just explain who the judges were, because we've got all these different categories. So the lovely, lovely Russ Shaw, who's head of Tech London Advocates, incredible man, and I really admire what he's doing.
Does some really cool stuff.
Yeah, particularly in terms of trying to make London the digital capital of the world, which... Yeah, it is.
And the food tech capital.
Food
as well.
Tech capital of the world. Yeah, him and I are on a mission for that. So he was one of our judges, and trying to get in his diary was amazing. So he was there. Caroline Steele, who's a little bit of a hero of mine. I was a little bit hero-y worshipping when she was there.
You're a fan of her TED talk, aren't you?
I made it a little bit obvious. Yes. So she did a TED talk about 10 years ago, and I thought this woman's incredible, and she completely changed the way that I look at London. And having been born in London, gone to school in London, lived a lot in London, you know, and my parents and my grandparents, my great-grandparents, all from London. Her explaining how London's been shaped by food was a complete revelation to me, in terms of the streets and the, you know, the open spaces and the way food used to be transported has completely designed, made the city designed in the way that it is. She had the most incredible dry sense of humour. She was
get on like a house on fire then.
She was brilliant, and she's obviously going to give a mini version of her TED talk at the awards,
which is
definitely worth hearing, because she's going to be able to stand up with an Oxo Tower with London behind her, pointing out
that
how
view up
London
there is fantastic, isn't it?
It's great. There was one point where I can't remember which one we were tasting something, and she really quite liked it. And I said, Carolyn, have you got any quotes as judges on what you think about this? She said, pass the plate and shut the door, is what she said. Which I thought was the best comment
That's
all
fantastic.
Day. Then the lovely Suzanne Howe, who's a really skilled food PR person, who knows loads and loads about brands and how to get people to talk and write about your food product. Then we had Tracy Sutton, who's a packaging design expert. That was pretty useful because we had a packaging design.
We had a whole category about
it. We did.
Outside the box.
And then Tessa Cook, who is just a food waste evangelist. And we're
Tessa's from Olio, is that right?
She is. Yep. And as Ollie has been pointing out, really, that there's a whole generation of people who are really interested in where their food comes from, but also very, very concerned about food waste.
It's certainly a huge trend that we've been seeing as well. And I saw a stat recently. It was something like there's been a 500% increase in the number of products that are being made from food waste or byproducts
over the last five years. Interesting. So let me just explain how we do the awards, and I know you're going to be jealous here, but essentially we people applied and they sent loads of stuff to the office. It was a good couple of weeks, to be honest. So we had loads of stuff. Some would be frozen, stick it in freezers. Some would need refrigerating. Some need cooking. It'd all get sent to our offices. The Food Talk radio team then whittled it down to five in each category.
In each category, right, yep.
And then us judges all met in London a few weeks ago, and we marked and scored every single one between us, and we've come up with a winner. But these are highly confidential and will only get,
you have to be there to see what's going on.
Who's going to win? So, let me explain who we sort of narrowed it down to.
Should we have a rundown of the categories first, just to give the overview?
We did a couple of taste ones, but we're not doing the normal taste awards because there are loads of those out there, and we wanted to be slightly different. So we were interested in people who have used really unusual ingredients or done something innovative
in an interesting way.
In a really interesting way. So in the sort of food, the finalists for that. 5D Chocolates, good old Russell and his team making these incredible hand-filled chocolates. Have you got those, Ben? They're incredible. Boozy Udders, so Sarah, who makes this alcoholic cocktail ice cream.
That sounds brilliant.
Boozy Udders. Good stuff, that. And then Jay Maker, so that's Melanie. She's got some spicy jerk chicken pâté. Got to try an ice.
Is that launched now?
I think so. It has been launched. And then Lavolio, who do sort of boutique confectionery, and then British Biscotti. So that's Paul and his lovely Parmesan and Fennel Biscotti. So there's a really interesting range there. Yeah. The judges didn't taste any of those. Didn't let them taste
those. Did you eat all of it?
Because all of these lovely guys are coming to the awards, and if you come along to the awards, so foodtalkawards.com, you can get tickets. You'll be tasting those, and you'll be voting as an audience member.
So it's like a People's Choice Award.
A People's Choice Award.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and then in terms of the sort of drink, again, Ben might know some of these. We've got Toast Ale. Yeah, really like Toast Ale. I love the story. I mean, that's a great story, isn't it? Really good
story.
And
it tastes good.
It does.
And it tastes good. So that's taking surplus bread, toasting it, and making beer.
Turning
out
it into
of
beer,
it.
Yeah.
It's brilliant, brilliant, genius. Well and Truly, again, is that a brand that you know?
No, but I'm writing it down.
Yeah. So that's Sarah, and she makes gazpacho. Gorgeous gazpacho. And then we've got Laprig Valley, Lorna Fleming, making apple and chilli juice. Now that's quite interesting.
Well, that quite
apple
interesting,
and chilli juice.
I'm there for that.
Mm. Oh yeah, you are big on chilli, aren't you?
Yeah.
We've got Trisha Patel, who makes this sort of a smoothie, goldeny milk spice blend, Spice Sanctuary. You thought you were going to know all of these, didn't you, Ben? I can see from your face.
I thought one from each category.
Yeah. And then who we've just heard from recently, Sian Holt, her team have managed to make drinking fudge, which technically was really difficult. Because fudge automatically
wants to kind of set, I guess.
And that's been very interesting. So those are all our ones that the audience can vote for. Then we did the free from. So we looked at products that are really, really difficult to take out certain things. So again, we looked at Mr. Organic, chocolate and hazelnut spread. No, Ben, still no. Not got that one.
But I think spreads is huge at the moment.
It is.
Nut butters.
I think people are fed up with horrible spreads.
And so much sugar in all of them as well.
Yeah, definitely. The Jim Jams guy is doing very well on that front. And then I particularly like these. Be Tempted. Anybody who's gluten-free will tell you about Be Tempted. And Sarah there, she makes these completely flourless chocolate brownies. And they were gorgeous, I have to say. They were particularly good. And we also had some gluten-free garlic and rosemary focaccia from Manavida. And I bet you do know Goopy. They've got those triangular boxes of like biscuity chocolates, I would say. They've been on the programme. They're all good fun. Mm. And Mash Direct crispy vegetable bakes.
Oh.
Nice. Yeah. So we had a good old taste of those.
Yeah.
So that was a good start to the morning.
I can imagine the order in which you did these was quite complicated.
That's the wrong order.
Start with the mash, or you start with the flourless chocolate? Because go wrong.
We have to start with the vegetable bakes, which is you can't end on hazelnut spread. And then if you've got a load of judges there, how do you do hazelnut spread? Do we put it on bread?
Just a big spoon.
We did actually. We laid out little teaspoons with little tasters on.
All sounds very. It was very upmarket.
So
before the cocktails.
Yeah. Then we had what we call gourmet gorilla, and these are people who've taken traditional types of foods and really stripped out the nasties. And tried to make something, you know, really clean and lovely.
I guess that fits with the health stuff that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. And that's got to be a massive growing space.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
I think so. My favourite, chorizo thins. Oh, God, I could have eaten 15 packets of these. and they're made by, they're called Made for Drink. And Daniel and his team, they make these chorizo thins and you open them and they're like the nicest dried chorizo you can get. Almost a bit like pork scratchings, but thin and lovely, not fatty.
Okay.
And they make them specifically
like a wafer,
to go.
Is it?
But it is actually
kind of
chorizo.
Thickness.
Yeah,
mm.
Yeah. And they make it specifically to go with a glass of Rioja.
Nice.
Very. You've got to get some of those.
Did you drink Rioja while you tasted them?
No, it was in the morning. It's not 9 o'clock. That was a bit bad. And then we had some other lovely things like tickleberries.
I've not come across them, no.
Tickleberries.
What are these berries?
I have to say, I know Andrew quite well. He's slightly mad. I'm sure he won't mind me saying. He uses aronia berries. He grows aronia berries, which nobody's ever heard of. And they've got a very interesting taste profile.
Really? What is it, similar to anything, or is it just completely random?
Slightly between elderberries and blackberries, I would say.
Okay.
Heard of them?
No.
Really nice. Interesting. And then we had, the lovely Frankie Fox, the foraging fox. I bet you've got their beetroot ketchup. Do you like?
No, we've got a lovely.
I don't know why. I thought he's bound to have these in all his shops. I bet he's got a great list of leads to go on.
Some of them, but your stuff is all made in London.
Yeah.
So some of it might not be.
Yeah, a lot of this is, though.
I'm looking at the postcode, the phone numbers, and if it's an 017,
We then got these Well and Truly crunchy cheese sticks, which was Harry's favourite in our office. They were interesting. And at some spare fruit, apple crisps. You probably know spare fruit. No, he's.
They're another one of these food waste type products. They take wonky fruit. And they make juice and crisps.
So those were all. So we ate all those. So that was a good morning. And then we had what we call Brilliant But Bonkers. And these are, we must have had about 120, 150 guests on the programme in the last year.
These are all ones from the show, weren't they? Previous
and these
guests.
Are all, you couldn't enter this. These were our favourites that have been on the show that we think has done something amazing. So,
Funnily enough, they're all quite alcoholic.
That wasn't into.
I'm just reading down the list now. Yeah, I'm looking forward to how you explain these.
I'm going to skate over that comment. Black Cow Vodka, which I think is an incredible story.
Yeah, it's remarkable.
It's a remarkable story, yeah. And this is Jason's milk vodka, so making vodka out of waste the waste product of milk, which is incredible. And I do like the taste of it. I don't even like vodka
that much. It's really, really smooth. It's unbelievable.
Lick, L-I-C, which is Noah and his alcoholic ice lollies. He's now got those in most of the mainstream supermarkets, actually, but they are great fun. And then Danny Lowe, who we had on the show about a year ago now, and he's really young, I think he's 19, and he's made Blockhead gum. It's chewing gum. You definitely wouldn't have this in your shop. He's made chewing gum where all of his mates play football and go in the gym, and you can absorb all these protein things. So instead of having a protein drink, you absorb it through gum, straight through your mouth.
Really?
Yeah. He's just a really young guy and managed to technically sort of get this sorted.
But that's a fascinating product.
It is. All of these are fascinating, I think.
Well, this is why they're brilliant but bonkers.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. And then you must know Spice Drops. Do you know Spice Drops? Yeah. Which, again, is a great product where instead of using, you know, sort of powdered spice, which degrades and sometimes probably 2 years old before you even...
Get it out of the
supermarket.
My cupboard's full of all these kind of crazy things that I've bought over the years, and then they just sit in a dark cupboard and never get used.
Exactly. Whereas Guri and her team have managed to get them down into little essence of drops, which is a much better way of doing it. And then, of course, Melanie, the Smith and Sinclair gin and tonic pastels.
They're just so good.
Favorite, yeah.
We had a bit of a giggle with that one, didn't we, Sue?
Yes. So we had to then eat all those.
That was terrible.
It was all in one day.
Yeah.
It was all in one morning.
That was breakfast before you arrived.
It was all in one morning. Yeah. Yes, that went well. Then we looked at some other interesting ones, which is packaging. You know, people doing really interesting things in the packaging sector. Mm. Not aesthetically, but trying to solve some
innovating in packaging.
And of course, we had the lovely Sol from Bumpmark, who was on the programme a few weeks ago. Yeah. That shows when a product degrades in your fridge in a remarkably different and new way. We had a few others on there. One of my favourites was tea sticks. Looking over at
I'm
Ben.
Guessing I know what that is.
No, so he's
is it
got
anything to do with tea?
So you know, in a stick form?
No, you know the little sachets that you get with sugar in, the long thin ones.
Yeah.
I mean, he's filled those with tea, and then what
like
you do
herbal
is
tea or
any tea, right. And then you pour hot water in, and you just stick this in, but you don't have to, you know, rip it and pour it in. Mm. It actually then just, you know, flows out from the packaging.
Infuses.
And of course, because it's that sort of shape, you can stir it as well. Really interesting packaging design.
Hang on, this is a little bit like the sort of pyramid
tea bags.
Tea
bags they have made back in the day.
It's good. I can imagine in a coffee shop, actually. Because you know how difficult having a tea bag is. As soon as you take it out, it just goes
a mess.
Yeah. Really, really clever stuff. So we had a good look at some of the packaging. And then we had a look at some of the sort of apps and things like that as well in terms of technology. Mm. So there we go. That's the Food Awards. So I just thought I'd run you through that.
So many wonderful things.
Yeah, it's on the 12th of June. Carl, I just absolutely cannot wait. And if you want to go on to foodtalkawards.com, if there's still any tickets left, which there may not be, you've got to be there because you'll be able to taste these things. That's the great thing.
And so. with these awards, what's the prize?
The prize is coming on this programme.
Well, that sounds fantastic.
So that you can really, really shout about your product, get some publicity. We can feed people through to websites. So we think that's a nice prize. And
absolutely.
Let alone all the recognition and all the social media that go around it.
Exactly. It's all about getting all these people together.
So, Ben, you've got
to get
tickets and good luck to everyone.
I'll be there.
Yes, that'd be great. So that's the end of another programme. And Ben, thank you. Ben Leask, thank you so much for joining us. I can't wait to turn up at your new venue. And if you want to know about it, you need to go on to benshouse.london.
Perfect. Yeah. I'll
Are you
see
excited?
You all there.
Excited.
Nervous, excited.
Nervous. It'll be amazing.
Tired.
I bet it'll be great. I absolutely love what you're doing. Absolutely love what you're doing.
Yep.
I think that's
brilliant.
Definitely the way to go. Ollie, thank you for joining us.
You're
great
welcome.
British chefs. Another good programme. Talk forever about going to shops and picking up amazing products. And again, thank you, Guy.
No problem. Always a pleasure.
Brush. Yeah. So, see you next week, everybody. And don't forget, you can catch up on the Food Talk show at foodtalk.co.uk. See you next week.